Okay, we are back. Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And what are you thinking about? How are you at this very moment? Good. That's good. You can always send me an email at info@realmeals.org. We can have an online email conversation, ask your questions, make your comments, tell me what you think, tell me how you're feeling, what's new, what's old, what you're grateful for, and something about food. I would love to hear from you. And, of course, we were talking about my website on the last part of the program. I have a nonprofit. It's called Responsible Eating and Living. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com is the website. And we're doing lots of fun things up there with food. Okay, so let's move on. And my next guest is me, Tracy McCormick. She's a real food and autoimmune cooking expert, a community food advocate, and the author of My Kitchen Cure, How I Cooked My Way Out of Chronic Autoimmune Disease and Prevented Cancer with Whole Foods and Healing Recipes. That is one great mouthful, and we're going to be hearing a lot more about that in the next half hour. Welcome to It's All About Food, Tracy McCormick.
Thank you for having me. How are you today?
You're welcome. Now, I want to know more about your first name, Me.
Me. My name is Me. When I was a little girl, my name is actually Megan, and my mother would introduce me to people, and she'd say, "This is Megan," and people would say, "Hi, Megan."
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, "It's not Megan." And so Me stuck, and then that's it. It just stuck. It became my nickname, and then it just has followed me everywhere. And still today, I'll explain it to people, and then they'll say, "Oh, okay, Megan." And then, "Okay, you didn't hear me." It's like saying your name is Chrissy and people call you Christy. And you're like, "Yeah, it's okay."
Yeah, it's funny because I was just asking my last guest how to pronounce his last name, and I try to be sensitive about it because we identify with the sound of our name, and when it's not pronounced correctly or written correctly, my name's Karen with a C, and how often do I see it written with a K? I'm all about paying attention and being mindful. So I was just kind of interested because I'd never seen that name before, Me.
Yeah, and then I guess it had a lot of, I didn't know, but, you know, it would be all, there were times where I didn't like that nickname, but it just sort of stuck around, and
mm-hmm.
and I guess it has relevance, you know.
Mm-hmm. It works. It works in this book.
Yeah, it works. It's about being authentic, that's for sure.
Okay, so you have a very, very compelling story, and I want to touch on some of that in the next half hour, kind of whet people's appetite, because they should know about it and read about it and learn from it. We're in a very bizarre situation right now in the United States with health care or disease care or whatever you want to call it, and shall we get it funded or not, and those who have it and don't. And there were interesting parts in your story about the medical profession, some of it good, some of it not so good. But one of my messages on this program that we can talk about is how we take responsibility for our own health and what we can do to do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's really what my story's about. You know, we can point our fingers at the medical community and doctors and nurses and get upset with them when they don't fix us, but it's not really, you know, we have, what I think has happened is that we've turned our doctors into gods, and
yep.
we go to them and we expect them to, there's a lot of expectation on them, and we expect them to fix us, and now they've become so accustomed with our expectation and our image of them being gods that they can only see one way of us fixing ourselves, and that's through them. And recently I had someone ask to review the book, and they were a little snarky, and they said, "How can a woman who's not a doctor, not a nutritionist, not a scientist, find a cure in her kitchen for a disease that scientists can't? Like, how is that possible?"
Mm-hmm.
That statement is the problem in our society. We are told that unless we are uber-educated, that we're professional chefs or nutritionists or doctors or scientists, that we cannot do anything for our wellness, that we can't
yep.
participate in our wellness because we're not educated enough or we don't have the wealth for it. And that statement that man made is exactly the problem. And So what's happening is, you know, as we take our power back, our personal power back, and we can do it via the kitchen, we're shifting our total relationship with our lives. And it's not just with our food and our health, but it's with the world that we're living in, the community that we live in, the way that we parent, and the way that we interact as a society.
I can understand to some degree how we got here. I talk about it all the time. We're all very busy and involved in our jobs and our family and surviving, and convenience is a very attractive thing, and we're made to believe things are convenient that may or may not be convenient, but we're mm-hmm. convinced they are, mm-hmm. and we are attracted to it, and that means unhealthy food, fast food, restaurant food, food that we think is food that isn't food, and then we get sick.
Yeah, and we pay the price of time either now or later, because either we pay the price of taking our time, slowing down, cooking real food, planning out meals, budgeting our checkbooks, organizing our lives, or we pay the price of time later when our time is cut short, or our time is lost to suffering and pain and discomfort mm-hmm. and chronic dis-ease. So the time conversation and convenience, you know, it's sort of like you may be okay right now, but it's going to catch up to you, you know. And I used to think, well, maybe you'll get sick. Well, now it's not maybe someone is going to get sick. It's when. It's not an if, it's when. And that's, you know, and it's changeable. Chronic disease doesn't have to exist.
You know, that's interesting. A lot of people are thinking that themselves, that they will get sick at some point.
They will.
It's just accepted, and that's so wrong.
It's crazy, right? And it's a doomsday thing. I mean, as I just agreed all calmly, yeah, they will. But and it's a doomsday situation that is preventable. But, you know, it takes a lot of personal responsibility. It takes a lot of commitment to owning your entire life. And it's not just, you know, the pill that we want from the doctor. We want everything done easy. We want everything cheap. And it's just the phase that our society has been in, and I really believe we're coming through it.
Okay, let's talk about chronic diseases. Now, we've got a long way to go in terms of people getting this message, but I personally think in terms of heart disease and diabetes, still we have a long way to go, but more people are speaking out about the power of nutrition in order to prevent and reverse these things, and more people are getting it. Autoimmune diseases are like next, and they're getting more press these days. We're starting to understand a little bit that so many different symptoms are related to autoimmune diseases and the mysterious bacteria, good bacteria, bad bacteria, sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's a whole new bag of worms. And Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, are in there, and you've had experience with this, and I know other people who have had success in turning it around. It's not information that's out there enough.
No. Well, first of all, it's autoimmune disease. There are 75 million people with autoimmune disease. There are more than 100 autoimmune diseases, and once you have one autoimmune disease, you're susceptible to acquiring up to 100 of them. Those 100 diseases are everything from type 2 diabetes is autoimmune, lupus is autoimmune, multiple sclerosis, thyroid disease, Crohn's disease, celiac, psoriasis, vitiligo, rheumatoid arthritis. Those are all umbrellaed under the autoimmune disease blanket. And so once you have one of them, you can have many of them. And so what it's really about isn't just, you know, there's a cure for one of these diseases. It's really about bringing the body back into balance. And there are a lot of doctors right now that are starting to look at it, and they understand that there are some links to the autoimmune diseases. It's environmental exposure. So depending on where you were raised, where you live, where you work, where you spent a chunk of your time, and what was around you environmentally, chemical-wise. The other, it's like a perfect storm that happens with people. And so that will influence the type of autoimmune disease you get. Then your body's constitution, the body that you inherited. So in my family, I inherited a weak link in the intestines. Mm-hmm. And so then what was I exposed to? That was another pinhole in my immune system. What bacteria and viruses was I exposed to? That's another big pinhole. And so Crohn's and colitis and celiac disease, which is the allergy to wheat, and when people have celiac disease, by the time they find out that they've had it, they've done a lot of damage to the lining of their intestines.
Yep.
And so people stop eating gluten. Well, what happens when you stop eating gluten? That doesn't heal you. That stops, you know, the damage from continuing. But then you have to rebuild that lining of the intestines, and you have to bring the body back into balance, because now you have an autoimmune disease. And you have to look at preventing other autoimmune diseases and keeping the immune system in balance. And how we do that is in the small intestines, because the small intestines is where the root of our immune system is. Our intestines are the root of our body's tree. That's our root. And like a tree planted in the earth, if the roots get sick, then down goes the tree. Well, that's the same thing for us. So in balancing the healthy bacteria, unhealthy bacteria, like you just said, keeping a balance there, supporting the body with a rotational diet, making sure the lining of the intestines are healthy and well, nothing is leaking, nothing is seeping, and that the villi are completely cleaned off and strong so that they can receive the nutrition from our food. That's where our immune system is. Those villi in the small intestine grab the nutrition. And when they're not supported because they're mowed down by too much wheat, too much dry, crunchy food, covered in mucus from excess dairy, and then the bacteria level is out of balance in the small intestine, so you have the unhealthy bacteria, and so you eat a diet high in sugars and fats and hard-to-digest foods, then you have a major weak link. So then that perfect storm comes together. What were you exposed to? What bacteria and viruses, and what environment do you live in, and what is your stress? Because when our stress is elevated, it throws the gut flora off and causes gut inflammation. So it's key. And so all that Crohn's and colitis are is an imbalance of bacteria. You get a really unhealthy dose of harmful bacteria a couple times, and then once you have it a couple times, you have some super bugs in the gut, and they gnaw at the lining of the intestines. And in my case, I didn't know, and I just kept eating a food rut diet. I loved processed food. I grew up in a food desert. I grew up on food stamps. I didn't know any better. And then when I made my way out of the food desert, went into the world, went to school, got a job, had enough money to buy food, I bought the food that I craved, the food that I lived on as a kid, processed chemical foods. And with autoimmune disease, the immune system is in overdrive. So it's trying to fight all the things that the immune system is exposed to every single day. 100 years ago, we went to sleep at night. We didn't sleep on flame retardant beds. We didn't sleep on carpeting with chemicals. We didn't have paint thinner, all, you know, paint and all the varnishes. And we didn't sleep with our cell phones and our laptops on our bed. And we went to sleep and our immune systems rested. And then in the morning, we ate a rotational diet because we had to eat seasonally. And we supported our bodies with real food. Well, now we don't eat much real food, and we eat lots of foods with additives and preservatives. Well, that sends the immune system into hyper alert, and it goes, woo, woo, what is that? And so are these warrior cells that are meant to work a very small percentage of the time are working 24 hours a day, 365 days, you know, a year,
yeah.
And they never rest. That's autoimmune disease.
Our bodies are pretty amazing at what they can do, and they are designed to eliminate toxins. We're just overburdening them beyond what their capabilities are.
Absolutely, and we're not supporting them in any way. We do not support our bodies. And in fact, the only way that we think we're supporting our bodies is extreme exercise. So we do extreme exercise. We work out 2-3 hours a day. We go to the gym, and then we think that we're going to be okay. But what's happening is, so maybe we're okay on the outside, but we're not supporting the major muscle, which is the intestines. No one is working out for their intestines, very few people. And so it's a, you know, and we also eat we work out so we can eat, as opposed to eating so you're well enough to
work out. If I work out a little longer, then I can have that piece of cake.
Yeah, so we view real food and healthy food as punishment, because we're like, oh, I ate cake yesterday and French fries. I better eat this today. And so we have a really warped relationship with eating supportive foods because we view them as punishment.
Yep.
Yeah.
And until you're on the other side, it's really hard to understand.
Until you go down and you watch somebody go down, and that's where we're at now. We've already hit the tipping point. You know, if 75 million people in this country have autoimmune disease, 2 out of 3 men are going to have cancer. Or what is it? 3 out of 3 men, or 2 out of 3 men? It's absurd numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's absurd.
If these numbers are so high, then that means everyone has someone who's not well. And children are growing up in a culture watching chronic disease. So when I was a little girl, my mother was very sick. She was the only one who was sick. I don't remember one person in my town being sick but her. And now my girls, I mean, I sit with moms at the dance studio or at the park, and there'll be 4 women, 3 of them, including me in that 4, have something.
Yep. And they think it's normal.
And now it's becoming normal. And, you know, I was thinking that today, too. We're just kind of like you said about cancer. Oh, well, we're going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Your story is very compelling, and it's fun to read. There's romance involved and all kinds of different things that make a story good. But I'm thinking that your story is not unique and that many people are going through something similar, and that's the scary part of it, because most people don't find their kitchen. And with Crohn's disease, with irritable bowel, most people are given cocktails of all of these pharmaceuticals that are going to do more damage than good.
They do. They really do more damage.
There's one part in the book I wanted to mention, and again, I want to say I'm very grateful for the medical community. They saved my life. I had advanced ovarian cancer, and I know that I wouldn't be here if it
That's
wasn't
right.
for the surgeons that did what they did. But at the same point, they also try to kill me. So you have to be so careful. And you talked about at one point you were living in Mexico. You came back to Los Angeles. You were on a mission to find out what was wrong with you. You went through a battery of tests. You told your doctors you weren't going to leave the hospital until you found out what you had. And then you got a second opinion. And after they sent a camera down your intestines and really didn't find a whole lot, later on, this other doctor was at a conference and saw this slide and told you it was yours and everything was inflamed. And I'm thinking, how did the doctor miss it?
Yeah, I mean, I've never talked to that doctor since. I should give him my book. Yeah, thank gosh I went and found a second opinion. And Dr. Leo is an amazing doctor. And the reason he's such an amazing doctor is he listened to me. And he didn't jump to conclusions and ideas and throw things at me. He really listened to me. He really supported me. And he was looking to see what was wrong with me. He was determined. And he did. He found a giant hole in my intestines. And had he not found it, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, my intestines probably would have ruptured, because when you have an ulceration, the total circumference like I did, as large as I did, it was like a rubber band ready to break, and or a thin thread. And changing my life and changing my plate and changing my fate it's been the greatest blessing ever. And yes, there are millions of me's out there. And when I wrote this book, I wrote it because I kept hearing this voice that said, you got to tell them. You got to tell them. There's a million me's. There's a million me's. And, you know, I wasn't able to help my mother. My mother had Crohn's disease, and she had a horrific experience with it in the 80s, and she died at 39 years old.
Wow.
And I watched her as a little girl. I stood in the corner, and I watched her bleed to death. And when I got sick, I thought, I'm not going out like that. And what changed it was my daughter was 5 years old, and she was looking at me, and I couldn't get off the floor. I mean, I couldn't stand up. And I thought, oh, no, I saw myself in her. And I thought, I've got to find another way. And I'm so glad that I did, because, you know, I don't know how long I'll be well for. I don't know how long we have to live on this earth. But I know that in the last 5 years, I've really done something grand as a parent. The thing I'm most proud of is taking responsibility for my health and done my best to work towards my own wellness, and my children have seen that. And I don't think I could have taught them a better lesson.
Excuse me. You mentioned something that I think is really important, and that is this voice in your head. And we need to listen to ourselves, because there's so much that we know intuitively that we need to believe in.
Yeah. And we have to listen to ourselves. We have
got
feelings. People can call it God. They can call it whatever they want. I'm comfortable with all of it. Put it all on the table. Name it what you want.
You don't want to be intimidated by a doctor.
Never.
And if your doctor is intimidating you, you need to find another one. You need to be with a team of people that you trust, that you know are on your side, that you resonate with.
You really do. And the last doctor that I saw was great, you know. I said to him, look, I'm doing the food. I'm feeling so much better. I'm seeing at a Chinese doctor. I do acupuncture. I just did it today. I still do it. I'll do it forever. And I said, and he really wanted to do a final procedure that was super dangerous, and he wanted to give me drugs. And I said, I think I'm going to do this food for a full year. And if it doesn't work, then I'll know it didn't work, and I'll be back. And he said, here's my card, and if you need me, come see me. And I said, thank you so much, and I hope I never see you again. And I've never seen him again. And he was great, because he didn't intimidate me. He heard me out, and I moved forward. And, you know, I think it's so important to find a doctor that can hear you, that can support you, and can hear you. You can find your voice. And you work with them. And, you know, if I ever get super sick and I can't get up off the floor, then of course I'll go to the hospital. And of course I'll, with, you know, grace and gratitude, receive whatever medical care I need. But as long as it's preventable and I can do my part, I'm doing my part.
What the medical community is really good at these days is diagnostic testing. And
amazing.
Some of it we do a little too much of. But
yeah. Well,
it's good to find out what's going on inside. Use whatever eyes that are out there, MRI and CAT scans and all kinds of different tools, colonoscopies. If you have a problem, you need to find out where it is. And then you can decide what to do about it.
Yeah.
But diagnostic tools are really, really powerful. Now, you've dealt with a lot of doctors and dietitians in your quest to get well, and some of them were not very respectful about your plan.
No, they weren't at all. I mean, that's another thing. When you decide to change your life pattern and you say, I'm going to do this food protocol, I'm going to try it, be prepared, because eating real food is kind of bizarre to most people. And a lot of nutritionists and dietitians are not caught up into the modern thinking of food and food and how it works in the body. They're still thinking about calories and fat content. I don't think about calories ever. Never do I look at the calories, because everything I'm cooking doesn't come in a box that tells me about the calories. I don't think about fat content at all. Mm-hmm. I think about healthy oils versus hard-to-digest oils, because if it's hard to digest, then it's not absorbable, and it's going to block my absorption, and I'm not going to be at my greatest potential. So I look at healthy oils and no calorie, and I think all about nutrition. And, oh, yeah, man, I had to spank a few nutritionists. I was like, listen. And their whole thing was, well, why? I don't understand. How can you get the right amount of calories if you don't eat cheeseburgers? I was like, what? And I do eat burgers now, y'all. I make my own grass-fed burgers once in a blue moon. But it's like, are you serious? Because I'm eating a plant-based diet, I'm not, what? And so we're in the change. The tipping point already happened. And, you know, if you go to a nutritionist and she doesn't have a clue about sea vegetables and leafy greens and how they support the body, go find somebody else.
Well, another point that you mentioned, I don't think you came out that specific about it, but it was really clear in your descriptions of these people. If people you're going to for health information and guidance do not look healthy themselves.
Woo, shawty.
Run in the other direction.
Right, because you want to walk somebody who walks their talk. I mean, that was the whole deal. I hadn't been to a gastroenterologist's office where everybody in the office was bright and shiny and healthy and happy, and I kept thinking, what are they eating? And that was a sign that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a mega whoop whoop.
really, really important. Yeah, and not obvious to most people, but
yeah.
You want to go to someone who walks the walk and looks healthy.
Yeah.
In many ways. You want it not just in their weight, in their skin, in the clarity of their eyes, and also in their personality, because
absolutely.
I think unhealthy foods can make you an unpleasant person.
Oh, sure, and they shut down your expansive ability to be expansive. You know, you really want to find someone who's got an expansive point of view, and that's my food concept. I started out rigid macrobiotics. I was completely vegan for a long time. I just kept having to learn more and more and more, and I kept finding that there are so many different diets, and the red thread is the real food, and it's eating in rotation and in balance, and being a mindful eater, and that's really that's the key component to wellness via food. And so for me, you know, there isn't just one way. There's many ways to get well, and when we start getting stuck and we think we have the way, look out. Because you're getting ready to trip. Because there's just not one way. There's many ways. And that has been the key to me remaining well, is expanding my point of view, hearing everyone's point of view, taking a look at it, and integrating what works for me, and shifting things around constantly, and changing my mind, you know, changing my mind. Right now, I have tofu recipes in my book. I'm not eating any tofu right now. So, but is tofu the evil devil? I don't think so.
Right.
But I also don't think, you know, I don't do dairy. Do I think dairy is the evil culprit and that's why we're sick? No, it's not one thing that's made us sick.
I do. I think dairy is evil.
Well, I don't eat it because I can't digest it and my kids don't eat it. And
yeah.
We have more cows than anybody I know, and nobody eats dairy on our farm.
Mm.
But that's a conversation. But to make dairy the villain will become a limited point of view. And you've got to look at a bigger picture, and you've got to look at your food excess and your food combination.
Well, I agree. We all need to align on a lot of very key essential points, that we need to be eating whole, minimally processed food, mostly plants.
Mostly plants.
We have not scientifically proven what the ideal diet is at this point, but we do know that it should be primarily plants.
Yep.
I'm personally a vegan for ethical reasons and environmental and everything else. But if we all at least move to this place of primarily plants, then we could move further and get better at it.
I agree everything 100%. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, it's just, so I've kind of been moving into this world of food advocates and food conversations. And I think that, you know, we just have so much self-judgment about our food, about what we eat, what we serve our families, how we eat it. And we get really rigid in our points of view. And I just keep trying to expand. I keep trying to hear everything and learn as much as I can.
Now, you give classes and help people learn about how to prepare food, which is crazy amusing to me, because people don't know how to prepare food. They don't know where their kitchen is. They get all kinds of scary. And I laugh because I see this all the time in Manhattan, all these gorgeous kitchens with all the greatest stuff and never touched.
I live in Malibu. The kitchens are bigger than the house, and no one cooks.
No one cooks.
I do. I run community kitchens from Malibu all the way to the hood in Nashville, to Music Row in Nashville, into rural communities. And this year, we have intention to open 18 community kitchens across the country.
Mm.
And I teach people how to cook real foods from scratch. Everybody comes in. We set up folding tables, butane burners. It's all plant-based. Chopping boards, cutting knives, aprons. I cook with upwards of 150 people for $1 a person. And we all break into stations, and we cook. And I have food angels that cook with me and lead each recipe. And then we sit down, and we eat a meal that heals, you know. And it's fascinating, because when I started out, I thought I only needed to go into food deserts. Well, again,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere.
I've been living part-time in Malibu, and I can't tell you, I almost feel like the wealthier the household, the harder it is, because you have options. It's really easy to go into a rural family in the holler in Tennessee and say, this is what y'all got to eat, and they're down because they have a limited amount of money, and they still have a relationship with farms. They still remember their grandmothers making black-eyed peas.
Mm-hmm.
And in urban cities, you have a lot of sort of know-it-all mentality. I'm already doing it, and it's a little more complicated.
Right. Well, me, thank you. Me, you, me, Tracy McCormick. Oh, My Kitchen Cure is a great book. Lots of wonderful information. You've really done your homework here, and I'm so glad that you're well.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for letting me share. And, you know, your platform is amazing, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you. You have a website?
Yes, metracy.com, and my book's on Amazon, My Kitchen Cure.
Okay, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Fantastic day, girl. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.